and welcome to The Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fospero. This week's guest has emerged a lockdown sensation, bringing together at its height more than 180,000 households across the UK each week, earning a place in the record books.
50 question pub quiz style questions as always, picture round, connections round and all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Jay Flynn's virtual pub quiz united the country when we were really at our lowest ebb. Jay has more than 400,000 subscribers on YouTube and Facebook, lots of followers on social media, and it's all brought new meaning to the traditional pub quiz. He's also raised more than £1 million for various charities in the process, and I'm delighted to say that he's with me now. Jay, it's fantastic to have you with us. For those who aren't aware, how did this all start? Tell us the story.
It's the happiest mistake, I think, of mine and then many, many people's lives. I was sat at work the day after Boris Johnson said that the country was going into a lockdown, and Thursday nights were my night to go out, to go to a quiz night. My group of friends weren't people who sort of fell out of nightclubs at 3 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't our scene. We'd rather go and sit at a lovely quiz. And having run pub quizzes on Thursday nights when I had a pub, and then that being my night out of the week, I just thought, well, what am I going to do now on a Thursday night? We're all going to be in a lockdown of, you know, all the pubs are going to be shut. What do I do? So I just went onto my own personal Facebook and said, hi guys, I'm thinking of doing a quiz on Thursday night online, seeing as we can't go to one. You know, if you fancy joining me, let me know. And if you want to share this to a couple of friends, more the merrier kind of thing. Expecting maybe 20 or 40 people that I knew in the local area to turn up. And then the Monday morning, I got a random message on Facebook from somebody I don't have any connection with saying, can you tell me how your quiz is going to work on Thursday night? Okay, that's a bit odd, but just looked at my social media post and there was 700 people interested. I thought, oh, okay. So I went into my boss, who's a very, very good friend of mine, Ian. And I said, 700 people interested in this quiz idea that I've got for Thursday night. And this was lunchtime. He said, oh, I'd be 1,000 by the time you get home. Of course, then there was the historic speech from Boris saying that I'm putting the whole country into lockdown and that's it. And he was wrong. It wasn't 1,000. By the time I left work, it was at 10,000 people. By the time I'd got the 15-minute drive to home, it was at 20,000 people. And then it just became an addiction watching the amount of people interested. So by the time that first quiz on the 26th of March last year came around, there was over 500,000 people interested in the event on Facebook. And to be fair, I was sat there for the few days before going, I don't know what I've done here. All I was planning on doing was opening up social media and just sitting there in front of a laptop camera and going, hi, right, let's ask some questions. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea what anyone was going to expect. And I cobbled it together. I cobbled 50 questions together, created a quiz and presented it to unofficially, because I didn't think of, you know, looking at it unofficially through friends and people who are watching on the various platforms on YouTube and on Facebook. We think it was a combined about 300,000 on that first night, but that's an unofficial figure. And I just said at the end of it, look, we don't know how long we're going to be in lockdown. If you want this to carry on, I'll do it every Thursday night if you want. You know, here's a new Facebook page. Come and join us rather than being on the event. And people flooded. Hundreds of thousands of people jumped onto the Facebook page and said, we've really enjoyed tonight. Love to do this all the way, you know, for however long we're locked down. And here we are 15 months later, still plugging away on a Thursday night doing quizzes. And it's not just Thursday now. It's live on a Saturday night as well.
It's an extraordinary story, that particular first night. Did you have any nerves when you realised that so many people would be tuning in and it wasn't a handful of mates and colleagues?
Yeah, with the YouTube studio, I was sat there in sort of like a lobby, if you like, waiting to push the button to go live. And it shows you how many people are watching the video. And I said I'd go live at 10 to 8 and have a bit of a chat with everyone and start the quiz at 8:15. So at 7 o'clock, I've gone in just to make sure everything was working and just looked. And there was, I think it was about 3,000 people watching. I've just gone, ah, I think the biggest quiz I've ever hosted in pubs was to about sort of 50, 60 people at the most. And then the numbers just kept going up and up and up. And the live chat on the right-hand side, I couldn't even keep up with it. It was just, everyone was in commenting. It was just, I was just like, all I need to do is just think, I'm just talking to that camera. That's all I'm talking to. I'm not talking to anyone else. Forget what numbers are out there, because otherwise I may just have a bit of a, oh, I'm really talking to this many people. And that's all I did was just concentrate. And that's all I do now. And I just talk to people as if I'm talking to my friends or my family. And so many people have commented on that over the last 15 months that they feel like they've seen me more than their own families and that I'm a part of their family. I sit in their living room every Thursday and Saturday night in a corner of their living room, talking random nonsense and then presenting a quiz, having a laugh, making mistakes. When I hosted the pub quiz, I claimed to be the most unprofessional quiz host in Darwin because that is what I was known as. I'd give away answers. I'd make silly mistakes. I can't spell things to save my life. And that's where the whole general knowledge thing came from. But that's me. I don't claim to be, I'm professional in the fact that I don't sit there swearing all the way through or things like that. I present it professionally. But I just describe myself as an idiot. That's all I am. I'm an idiot who talks to, tens of thousands of people on a Thursday and Saturday night. And people love that. They love the fact that in 15 months, I've not gone from, what am I doing? I'm presenting a quiz to, now, oh, look at me. I'm something. I've stayed the same person. I'm still the same idiot that presented that first quiz on the 26th of March.
But that's what people love. Not that you're an idiot, because I don't think you're an idiot at all. And we'll come on to amazing things you've done with this as well, which absolutely shows you're certainly no idiot, Jay. But what I love about the fact that you talk about you didn't feel intimidated by those numbers in broadcasting throughout my career, I've been lucky enough to broadcast to millions of people down the barrel of a camera. Put me in front of the WI and the whites of people's eyes and get me to do a presentation to 10 ladies over tea in Battenberg and I'm terrified. I think it's easier to be yourself, isn't it, when it feels to you like it's one-on-one and your personality just shines through. I feel like I know you from looking at the quizzes.
Yeah, I think I learned a very, very harsh lesson very, very early on that social media can be a very, very not nice place to be. And there was a point, and a lot of people pointed it out to me, that in that first quiz, there was some not very nice things being said. People said they could see it in my eyes that it was affecting me. And once I learned quite quickly, and I took some great advice, had the opportunity to speak to some wonderful people over the last 15 months. And it's the first thing I ask every single one of them, how do you deal with social media? And the advice I was given was, if you can, delete and block. If not, ignore them. And once I realized that and then just removed any distractions away from me, there was just a camera. It doesn't matter what people were saying about me behind the scenes or, what people were saying in the living rooms, etc. I can't hear it. And I did my first face-to-face quiz a few weeks ago as part of a bit of a celebration. I got to meet some of the wonderful people that have that supported the quiz and played the quiz over the last 15 months. Even that in itself, a friendly audience, but there was that little bit of heckling, a little bit of banter. But that being in that situation, this is it. I'm back to a proper pub quiz. This is great. Whereas removing everything and just concentrating on what was in front of me, that's how I managed to get through it. And some great advice.
I think it's important to remember that social media is fantastic for fundraising and things like that and for getting the word out there. But it's also a place, unfortunately, where cowards hide. And I think we've seen that over the last few days with the England players, the really unpleasant material that's been on social media that's turned most of our stomachs. We have to ignore and block. And in those circumstances, I think take further action. But that's another story. My brother and his wife and daughter are absolutely devotees on a Thursday night. They're called the Simple Birds. I think they're desperate for a shout out at some point, Jay. My sister-in-law said to me on a text, we do Jay's quiz every Thursday with three other households. It's kept us all close. And one of the brilliant things was that all our kids did it, bringing our families together and making lockdown easier. She also added that she learned a lot. I mean, that's high praise indeed. And I'm guessing that sort of sums up how people feel about it. You brought people together, didn't you? At a time when we were all feeling a bit low and a bit miserable being locked down, you made us feel that life carried on and gave us that something to look forward to.
Yeah, and it helped me as well. And because I had nothing to do and it gave me a sense of purpose, if that makes sense. Through pure chance and luck, I suddenly had people looking to me to sort of help guide them through probably the worst period of all of our lives that we, you know, especially our generations have ever had to experience, of being told you can't do this, you can't do that. Reading a lot of the messages, especially over the last 15 months, of how it's reunited families across the country, how it's helped people get through, you know, bereavements and things like that. And it's only now, I think, over the last sort of couple of months, that it's finally hit me what I've actually done. Because it's all well and good reading those messages and the comments and everything of people saying, oh, you've helped reunite me with my mum in Scotland, or, and you can read those and take them on board. But having actually sort of started to meet people and actually seeing their reactions to me, when they did the face-to-face quiz, people were saying, I know we can't have a hug, but is there any possibility I can? Because it's like, no, I really can't. I really would love to. Lovely young girl who, you know, and their family had gone through a bereavement, and people wanting photos with me. I got stopped in London. We came to film something in London a few months ago. I got stopped by a policeman in London for a selfie. Even he said, you know, as a policeman, what we've gone through over the last, you know, however many months is just been incredible. We've worked all the way through it, and you have been something that us as a team have been able to do to give us that light relief and get through it. And I think now it's starting to hit me that I've had an impact on a lot of people, and not something I ever thought I would do in my lifetime. I just plodded along through life and, you know, day to day, and got on with it. And now an inspiration to people and help people and give them a sense of purpose. And even though we're coming out of it now to a degree, there's so many people who aren't able to go out or still not able to reunite with their families because they're two ends of the country. And that's why we're carrying on. I'm not, you know, there's a lot of people who did things throughout lockdown who've gone, right, that's it, I'm back to whatever I wanted to do. I've said, no, we carry on, because those people still need something to do on a Thursday and a Saturday night, regardless of the fact that we can go back outside and play with our friends and family.
You're recognisable now. And if TV stations came knocking and said, look, come on, Jay, we'd love to do this for a TV show, would you do it? Or would you feel that that's a bit removed from the original idea, which is you in everybody's rooms by virtue of being virtual?
The last sort of 15 months have opened up lots of incredible sort of opportunities. I'm very privileged to be a part of Zoe Ball's breakfast show team on a Thursday morning. So I do a 5-question quiz with them to 8
million
odd people.
I just realised that's you. I didn't realise the J was you. Oh my God.
Yes,
I never
me.
Get more than 3. I love Zoe Ball. I never get, I'd like her for a podcast if you could sort that out. But I never get more than 3. And she gets so frustrated, doesn't she, if she doesn't do well.
Oh, she won on Thursday. She
did
was very happy.
Excellent.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm very privileged to be a part of their team every Thursday morning. And I'm the only person, I think, throughout the whole week who gets to take full control of Radio 2's breakfast show for 15 minutes. Because I'm, as the producers say, you are in charge. Do not let them take the advantage. You are in control for these 15 minutes. And if opportunities presented themselves, I wouldn't necessarily take Jay's virtual pub quiz onto TV. We were approached in the very early days about, you know, sort of a goggle box style idea of this and put it onto late night Channel 4 on a Tuesday. And we sort of looked at it and sort of thought, that's not the right way to do this. I've got great ideas and I've got lovely, you know, different ideas that I'd love to do. I'd love to do a documentary around homelessness from someone who's lived it, someone who's been in the homeless situation, and actually show what homelessness is about, what it's like for people who are that genuine definition of, I am a man without a home. I am a homeless man. I'm a homeless person, and show what it was like. And the things to look out for to stop that next door neighbor, that friend of yours, from going down the same path. Because I think if my friends and family at the time had realized what I was going through, then potentially, you know, it could have stopped. But yeah, I'd love to do a kind of a quiz, but then I don't want to be pigeonholed, because that's what a lot of people do. You know, oh, there he is, he's a quiz host. Let's give him a quiz role. I think I've been able to show over the last 15 months that I am versatile in a way that if something landed on my doorstep, then I'd definitely consider. But yeah, I never expected to be in this position, let alone, you know, sort of still presenting quizzes to tens of thousands of people on a Thursday and a Saturday night. So if anything, any opportunities, I'd consider anything, really.
I think the homeless documentary would be absolutely amazing. They say that we're all 3 paychecks away from actually being homeless. I think the title of yours one idea might be Life at Number 3 Riverside View. That's where you were, isn't it? When you were down on your luck and not alcoholic, not a drug addict or anything like that, literally as a man with no home. Can you just tell us a little bit about it, Joe, and what life was like and how you did turn life around?
The problem for me was my mental health was on its knees. And we're talking mid-2000s when mental health was still a little bit taboo to talk about. People didn't, and especially at my age of sort of, you know, I would have been 24, 25 years old. They didn't put their hand up and go, I have a problem. Can you help me? Because it was very taboo. It was, you know, oh, you should be a 25-year-old man. You should be, you know, look at me. I'm strong. I'm capable of everything. And because of those attitudes, I think that contributed a lot to my mental health deteriorating completely to the point that I didn't know who to turn to and I didn't know who to trust. And looking back on it now, there were a lot of friends around me who wanted to help. But because I wasn't of sound mind, body, however you want to describe it, I didn't think they were trying to help. I thought they were trying to control or you know, do something completely different. So I packed up my things packed up as many things as I could without really thinking and set off into the night, never to return. And I started by trying to get some sleep on night buses. Having been born and bred London, I knew my way around public transport in London. So, you know, I knew there were night buses that went on hour and a half long journeys. I knew that night buses went out to Heathrow Airport and things like that. But that was just never going to work. I was only getting sort of, you know, half an hour sleep. You're up again, back down, half an hour sleep, you're up again. Eventually, I sort of, after a couple of months, I thought, right, I need to find somewhere to sleep. And I ended up finding the most public spot that anyone could possibly find. But having never been homeless, I didn't know I'd seen homeless people around, obviously, but I didn't know sort of how it works. So I bedded down on the embankment. And because of the way we number, you know, sort of roads and stuff and houses in the UK, I was on the second bench along. So for me, it was number 3. And then I thought, well, I know this is Victoria Embankment, but I'm going to name it as well. So I'm going to call it Riverside View. That gives it a bit more, oh, look at this. You know, this is quite fancy. Victoria Embankment, London. And to be fair, the views from there were just beautiful. People pay millions to wake up to the view that I had every single morning. But again, I always tried to make sure I was gone by 7 o'clock in the morning. So even though I was sleeping on a bench, I was always conscious. I didn't want people judging. And I also didn't want people thinking, oh, there we go, London, there's another homeless person slept there, because I was proud of the city that I was born and bred in. And I didn't want people to have that aspersion about us. I didn't want people to think that way. So I always tried to make sure I was gone by 7 o'clock in the morning. And I always tried to keep my appearance up. All I would do, sometimes for up to 18 hours a day, was walk the streets of London. And I didn't beg. I didn't steal. I didn't break the law. I'm very, very proud of those things. I survived pretty much on a diet of custard creams and tortilla chips, because at the time, a packet of custard creams from Sainsbury's or from supermarkets was about 20 pence. And those tortilla chips, the supermarket own brands, were like 15 pence you could buy them for at the time. And I just walked finding loose change and whatever I could find. I remember I found, I mean, this shows you sort of the year it was. I remember finding an iPhone 3G in the street. And the first thing I did was took it straight into the nearest police station. Now, somebody of unscrupulous morals could have gone, right, let's see where I can go and sell this. But for me, that's somebody's phone with photos and their livelihood. So that went straight into the police station. And that's what I did. I wandered the streets of London for, you know, sometimes for up to 18 hours a day. But if you'd have seen me in the street, you wouldn't have gone, that's a homeless person, because I blended in. I was anonymous. I was anonymous on the streets of London for nearly 2 years.
That's extraordinary. So, yeah. How did you, one thing I always wonder, because I do stop, and particularly my little boy feels very passionately about the fact that there shouldn't be people sleeping on the streets. We need to look after people. How did you manage with the cold? That's something I always wonder, the cold, the weather, the rain, nights that were biting cold and you're on a bench. How do you survive that?
So I got hold of a sleeping bag when I first went out. It was sort of June, July time. So I could sleep sort of on the bench, bag behind me. I didn't need a sort of blanket, thankfully, to the London weather. But I started to realize that I was going to need some kind of protection. And I didn't know anything about sort of homeless day centers or homeless, you know, support centers or anything like that. You know, there's not a guidebook that says, you know, congratulations, you're homeless, here's what to do on day one. So I realized quite quickly I was going to need to get something. So I started to save a bit of money back. So, you know, one day if I'd find a pound, instead of spending that whole pound on getting custard creams and, you know, fizzy pop or what have you, I'd go, right, I'll get one packet of custard creams today and I'll put 80p to one side. So I started accruing some change and then managed to get hold of a sleeping bag, which then, you know, sort of changed the way that I could sleep there. But then I also worked out that newspapers, things like that, would give it that extra insulation inside a sleeping bag. So when I'd bed down, I'd be picking up the newspapers. They had a dual purpose. They kept my mind going. So I'd be doing the crosswords in them, the Sudoku puzzles. I'd be, you know, all those little puzzle pages that you see that most of us take for granted now and sit there on a train and might, you know, do those. I was using those to keep myself occupied. But then I'd put those inside the sleeping bag. That would insulate. I remember one night I woke up sort of in the middle of January, February. It was one of the coldest sort of winters we had in London. When I went and bedded down on the bench, it was cold, but I was okay. I was in my sleeping bag, got myself warm, and I was okay. I woke up the following morning surrounded by snow, and there wasn't a patch of snow on me. I was dry, whereas my body here had sort of, you know, kept it away from me. But all around me was snow, and there wasn't a single footprint anywhere on the pavement. And I just sort of looked and went, ah, okay, that could have been very, very awkward and very, very cold. But again, for me, you know, getting through that night, and for me, it was always about, right, keep some, you know, you've just found a fiver, right? Keep some of that back and keep building up your reserves to, you know, you might need a jumper or something, things like that.
And you did eventually find and seek some help with a charity in Charing Cross. And how did they help you get life back on track?
And that again was by pure chance, connection at St. Martin's. You know, they've said to me, I can't believe we've never been down to the embankment because we didn't think anyone would be stupid enough to sleep in the most open public right by the river. It's not a place that someone goes and sleeps. And they left a card with me to say that we're a homeless charity just up the road. Come and see us. That was almost my first sort of contact with reality. I'd had the odd conversation mainly with tourists who were lost in London and sort of helping guide them around London. But this was my first sort of, right, by the way, we've noticed you. We know who you are. We know what your life's about right now and we want to help. And it took me probably about 3 days to actually go and to walk through the door and to almost admit, yeah, I need help. But they were brilliant from day one. They've got all sorts of various services in there from, you know, and they were open and honest with me straight away. They said, you're not an alcoholic. You don't have a drug abuse problem or anything like that. It might take us some time to work with you, but we will, and we will find a solution and we will help you and we will get you off of the streets. But it won't be tomorrow. It won't be next week. It's going to take some time. But they were brilliant. They had, you know, showers, washing machines. They had lockers that we could store things in. The two things for me that really got sort of my brain working was they had a creative space where you could go and sit and you could go and do drawings, artwork, etc. Now, I'm not the most brilliant at drawing things, but, you know, I draw things with straight lines and, you know, those kind of drawings that you see. But I was taught a bit of artwork and that really got my mind sort of working again. But they also had a workspace, which was absolutely brilliant. They got links in with different companies who would help support people who were homeless and coming off of the streets. And they sat me down and said, what would you like to do? Now, I'd spent 2 years listening to the radio, listening to sort of Chris Miles on Radio 1 and radio plays and all sorts of various things for 2 years. That's what had kept me going. And I said, well, I'd love to be a producer of radio. That's what I'd really quite like to do. And they said, we have never in all the years had someone walk in the door and say that, right, challenge accepted. Let's find out what we need to do to get you into radio. And they did. Within a week, they'd come back and they said, right, well, this is the pathway that you need to take. So you'll have to go to college and do bits of this and then, you know, maybe a bit of a degree work and stuff like that. But we've managed to potentially get you some work experience as a sound engineer at the Royal Court Theatre, but we need to wait until you're resettled and stuff. And that's just how good they are. You give them a challenge and they'll go and do it. And they supported me all the way through. Temporary accommodation. It wasn't like, right, you're in temporary accommodation. Thanks, bye. They just carried on and they carried on supporting. And that's why I now support them and I will shout about them. And I urge anyone who knows of someone who might be, you know, someone they passed on the street who might be homeless find the nearest homeless center, day center, shelter, whatever it might be, and just guide that person to it, because they helped me when I didn't think I could be helped. And these places, and it's not just a connection at St. Martin's, they are all across the country, and they are all incredible with what they do to help people.
I know how grateful you are. And we said in the introduction that over the last 15 months, you've raised a staggering more than £1 million for various charities, and Connections is in there too, isn't it?
Absolutely. The quiz was never set out as a charity sort of venture. That was furthest from my mind. It was just to entertain the local people of Darwin. And after that first quiz, people said, look, you've got an incredible platform. You could do so much good here. And I sat there and thought about it. I thought, actually, you're quite right. So the first charity I picked at the time was the most perfect choice, was the NHS Charities Together. And we've just on them on their own, I think we raised over £200,000 for NHS Charities Together. And that was in the space of a week. We went on to support Alzheimer's Research UK. With them, we were very privileged to have Stephen Fry co-host one of the quiz nights.
Thank you, Jay. You are a marvel. Now, ladies and gents, it's round two, general knowledge, or as the Jester likes to put it, general knowledge. So let's start. Sharpen your wits and your pencils or whatever else, and prepare for question one. Which of America's states comes first alphabetically?
And that night that Stephen Fry was on with myself, we raised £200,000 in a night for Alzheimer's Research UK. But once we'd supported those, it was a case of, right, well, where do we go now? And I'm bringing a connection at St. Martin's in. The quiz isn't just watched in the UK, it's across the whole of the world. And it was a risk focusing on a homeless charity that's based in central London that just looks after Westminster. But for me, and I always said to them, I will always repay you because I feel I owe you a debt for what you have done. For me, this was my biggest opportunity to start to repay that debt. So I got in touch with them and said, you know, would you be interested in allowing me to focus on you guys on the quiz? And it was great because I got to speak to some of my old key workers that I'd lost touch with over the last couple of years. And I'm still supporting them now again because we're rotating charities. They're now our focus charity. I'm running the London Marathon for them in October as well. Like I say, any opportunity I've got that I can support them, I will take all day long because I feel they need that recognition and being sort of put out there for people to support.
I want to ask you more about Stephen Fry and Alzheimer's Research UK in a second, but just we'll leave the homeless side of the story in a second. I think it's really wonderful that you're able to be as honest and heartfelt about it and share that story because it really is inspirational. But what was the view at Three Riverside View? What did you wake up to when the sun was shining in the mornings on what presumably were some brighter days than bad weather days? What did you wake up and see?
It was beautiful. So I've pinpointed it, but for listeners, so if you came out of Embankment train station and turned left, you've got the pier on the right-hand side, which has all the riverboats and stuff. And then I was sort of second bench along to number three. Just a beautiful London skyline facing south. I mean, I'm from South London, so it was the best way to sort of be looking towards the south. Over the Charing Cross Bridge to the right, you know, I can see the London Eye there on the right-hand side. You can see the Oxo Tower and stuff in the distance, just get a glimpse of St. Paul's Cathedral. But for me, it wasn't necessarily waking up to that as well. It was at night. How beautiful London is lit up at night with all the buildings and all of the colours. Someone said to me the other day, but isn't it a shame that you're not there now because you've got all the newer buildings? You'd have had woken up to like the Shard lit up and things like that. And I said, well, yeah, I see your point. I'm glad I'm not there now, but you're right. Yeah, the number three Riverside View has become an even better view than it was. But I'm born and bred London and I love the city that I'm from. I'm not there now, but I go home as often as I can. But it's just a beautiful city. For a hustle and bustle of a city to sit on the embankment 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you might have a little bit of traffic behind you, but it's so peaceful, especially waking up at sort of half six in the morning. You'll get a couple of joggers maybe coming past, but other than that, you just get the River Thames and the sound of the waves and just looking around. It's such a beautiful, peaceful city at that point. You go half a mile up into Trafalgar Square and it's chaos. But down there, it's absolutely beautiful and so relaxing and peaceful.
I was there this week, actually, Jay, because I had a meeting at Convex Insurance, who started this podcast and commissioned it. And they're in one of those really modern buildings, the Scalpel Building, which is absolutely stunning and new and glass. But I love the juxtaposition of the old churches from the 1600s. nestling next to these wonderful buildings like the walkie-talkie building. It is a beautiful part of the city, and I think it's a wonderful title if you make your film or write your book, and I think it'd be lovely if you wrote it down sometime, because I think you'd help so many people if you got a chance to do it. You mentioned Stephen Fry, you also mentioned Alzheimer's Research UK, and that is a charity, actually. That's Convex's chosen charity, because the CEO of Convex lost his mum to dementia. And so it was lovely for me sort of researching you, realising that I think you've given more than 350,000 to Alzheimer's Research UK. So how did that connection lead to the legend, who definitely is Stephen Fry, getting involved? And what was that like for you?
Surreal. I'm very privileged to have somebody who reached out after the first quiz, Alex Holmes, who's the deputy CEO of the Diana Award. And he reached out after the first quiz and could kind of see that I was getting a bit overwhelmed and said, look, I just want to offer you a bit of advice. Is there any, you know, could we have a chat? And he's been with me ever since. He's been by my side. He's been behind the scenes. We often joke about, you know, sort of what his actual sort of job role is. And, you know, I joke that he does bits and pieces in the background behind the scenes for me. But because he's from the charity sector, he's spoken to so many charities to help. And Alzheimer's was one of those. And in the early stages, Alzheimer's Research, they said, look, well, we might be able to get someone who could co-host the quiz with you. It'd be pre-recorded, so you write the questions, we'll bring them on board. I don't know the whole, everything is alien to me. I'm learning every day. So I'm thinking, you know, probably going to be someone off of someone, you know, some reality TV show or something like that. So to then get the phone call that Stephen Fry is interested, would like to record, I'm like, this is Stephen Fry wants to come on to Jay's virtual pub quiz. No, it should be the other way round. Surely it's going to be Stephen Fry's virtual pub quiz and I'm on. And it was brilliant. I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that a lot of celebrities tried to do quizzes during that first lockdown and they were trying to do live quizzes. And people were pointing out, not just friends and family of mine, but also people who were playing the quiz saying, have you seen X celebrity? They've just done a quiz and they've been broadcasting to 1,000 people. You're broadcasting to 180,000. And I'm started thinking, yeah, but it should be the other way around. I should have the 1,000. They should have the 100. And I think that first lockdown, it was very, very weird that Stephen Fry was brilliant. And then we did some specialist quizzes for Alzheimer's Research UK with Jonathan Ross. Stephen Fry did his own one and Scarlett Moffat. They were standalone quizzes on their own and they were very, very well received. But I think there was just this little thing that during that first lockdown, people weren't interested in those household names because people said, Jay, it's been brilliant having Stephen Fry, but we wanted you. It's a nice touch, but we wanted you. And I'm like, why? Why? You know, this is a household legend who has come onto this tiny little quiz, but it achieved its aim because I think that night we raised, on that one night, we raised over £200,000 for Alzheimer's Research UK. And for us to be able to give that back to them is just absolutely incredible. And we're really grateful for Stephen Fry to give up his time and for everyone who's appeared. We've had some really incredible people appear from A-list in the UK to A-list Hollywood. It's just surreal sitting on a Zoom call where Rick Astley's staring back at me, getting ready to record a song that's going to go in one of the breaks to entertain everyone. It's not something that if you'd have told me last, you know, January 2020, by the way, later on this year, you're going to be sat on a Zoom call listening to Rick Astley performing a song that's going to be on your quiz that's on YouTube watched by 180,000 people, I would have called you mad, to be fair.
But do you know what I think, Jay, chatting to you today? I think it's because you're you and you're a normal bloke. So actually, when we've all been on these makeshift Zooms over lockdown with our family, I mean, you know, there've been funny angles, haven't there? I mean, my mum and dad never got the hang of the Zoom. We could always see, you know, the top of mum's head or the bottom of her chin or whatever. And I think that's been really appealing that you're you and you're like us. And that's quite different. It's great to have contribution from A-listers, and especially it really helps with the fundraising and profile and everything. But I think that's been a massive part of the appeal, and that you've worked in pubs and you're the sort of bloke that I'd like to come into the pub and have a drink with at the bar.
I just don't have a filter. I think that's part of, it's been a blessing and a curse all the way through my life. I've always been a very sort of open book friendly person because I like being around people. I'm a sort of people person, but I'm not a people pleaser, if that makes sense. I won't have that opinion with someone and then the complete opposite opinion of that, you know, 20 minutes later with someone else. I've got my opinions and I stick with them. But if someone asks me a question, I can't do anything but either be honest or talk about it. You know, someone puts a direct question to me, I feel like I have to answer it, because it sounds really weird, but there's a film that always sticks in my head, which is Phone Booth with Kiefer Sutherland and Colin Farrell. There's that line at the end of the film where Kiefer Sutherland's voiceover says, a ringing phone, you never know who it is, but a ringing phone always has to be answered. That's always stuck in my head, that a question always has to be answered, because then you leave too many unanswered questions because people then formulate their own opinions. And that's what I've always done all the way through my life. I've always answered honestly with anything that people have put to me. So yeah, I'm an open book, but have also have no filter as well.
Who do you think gave you the best advice that you've taken on this journey with you?
Two people, three really. Zoe Ball, without any shadow of a doubt. Zoe's been absolutely brilliant, and I'm really proud to still be a part of what was supposed to be a one-off quiz back in May last year as just a bit of a fun for the audience. It's still going 13, 14 months later. So Zoe's been brilliant with her advice, and she's been really helpful with anything I've kind of sort of struggled with in this industry that I've now found myself in. And then two random ones, really. Bobby Siegel, who is the maths presenter, and he was on University Challenge a few years ago. He does a lot of work sort of education-wise for BBC. Big West Ham fan. He'd been playing the quiz early on, and we were following each other on Twitter, and I just approached him and said, can I have a chat with you about social media and how to handle it? He was absolutely brilliant. And then the random one for you is a gentleman called Spencer Owen, who is the chairman of Hashtag United Football Club, which started off as a YouTube series. And originally he was playing FIFA games, football games on computers. And then he built that into turning his friends to playing football and doing challenges, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd followed his progress for many, many, many years. And when this started to get a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be and didn't know what to do, I just dropped him a message on Twitter and just said, is there any advice? I've followed you for a long time. Is there any advice you can give me? And he replied, and he just said, be yourself and just think of everyone out there as your friend. That camera is your friend, and that is all you're doing. And that's all I've done. That was the best piece of advice anyone could have given me, is you're just talking to your friends. And that's all I've done for the last 15 months, is just have conversations with my friends.
I know your wife works in the NHS. And how do your wife and your little boy feel about what you've been doing? And do they take part in the quizzes too?
Jack's 4 years old. He knows that daddy goes out to work and occasionally sees me up on the screen and goes, why is daddy on the telly? We've kept so many memories and so many bits and pieces that when he's old enough to understand, we'll show him about the crazy time, not just for me, but obviously what everyone went through this crazy time. Sarah, no, doesn't watch the quiz. She'll admit to herself she's not the brightest. When I was broadcasting from the living room and doing the quizzes live there, she would sit on the sofa either heckling me, saying things, taking the mick out of me, but she wouldn't be answering the questions. When I had an attempt at a Guinness World Record for the quiz marathon by a quizmaster that we're doing again in August, because there was a bit of a glitch with the video file, so we're having another go at attempt it on the August Bank Holiday weekend. When I finished that at sort of 8 o'clock, the attempt at 8 o'clock in the morning, I went straight to bed and then woke up and realized I hadn't written that Thursday night's quiz. Well, Sarah had come to the rescue. She wrote the quiz, and everyone was like, do not let Sarah ever write a quiz again. This is impossibly hard. She is evil. Do not let her do it. And you know, we were just having the conversation as I was dropping her at work this morning. I've not struggled with, but I've just about managed to find a balance. It's all well and good writing a quiz for 40, 50 people in a pub, because you know what your audience is, you know what their rough intellect levels are. But when you've got hundreds of thousands of people all across the world, not just in the UK, trying to write 50 questions every Thursday and Saturday night to cater to everyone's need is really, really tough. And I think I've just about found the right balance with it now. But I'm still tweaking and still, and I still get people say, I don't like art and literature, or I'm not a fan of science and nature. And I'm thinking, yeah, I know, but 90% of people have enjoyed that. The 10%, look, it will come back round to you. Next week, it'll be sport and leisure and you'll be absolutely fine.
Wow, so, you must have learned a lot as well. And of course, you are a world record holder now. Is that for the number of people who joined?
Yeah, so it's the most viewers of a quiz live stream on YouTube. Really, really grateful to the team at Guinness World Records who got involved and supported us with it. But yeah, 182,513 connections. So that's not the amount of people, because if you think average 2, 3, maybe 4 people to a household. So that's just 182,000 connections. Our crude maths thinks that that one night could have been over 500,000 people watching me on a Thursday night.
I think that could be a conservative estimate, actually. But how long have you got to keep going on that August bank holiday if you're going to set a new record?
So it's the longest quiz by a single quiz host marathon. And the current record stands at 33 hours and 4 minutes. When we did the attempt in November, I got to 37 hours, I think it was. So I stopped because I was exhausted. I planned on going for a full 48 hours, but that was never going to work. By the time I'd got to 37 hours, I'd been awake for 2 nights. It was poorly executed last time around, but we're up and running with it this time. And start at 8 o'clock in the morning on bank holiday Sunday and finish at 8 o'clock in the evening on bank holiday Monday. So there's only one night that I need to be awake for, which is fine. I've done that many times before.
I'll have a think about you because that's my birthday weekend. So I'll be tuning in then. Do you know, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. And I've really got to pay a little bit of a tribute to my brother for actually just saying, why don't you just message Jay on Twitter? And that's exactly what I did. To your credit, you replied immediately saying, email me. And that shows to me you've still got both feet firmly planted on the ground. It's been great. I've really enjoyed your stories, Jay. Thank you for jiggling things around so that you could be our guest this week.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to Jay Flynn, creator and host of Jay's Pub Quiz on Thursday and Saturday nights. And I've just now realised that it's Jay Flynn, who is the Jay, who joins Zoe Ball every week on Radio 2. So that's going to make me smile now next time I partake in that on Radio 2. If you're free and haven't given it a whirl, then do tune in and pit your wits against your friends and family. I know you're going to have a lot of fun doing it. And don't forget to download and subscribe to our series at convex.podbean.com or search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, or just ask Alexa. I'll be back next week with another great guest, so bye for now.